Thanks for inviting me into your home, RV camper, your parents' basement, loft, long-haul truck, taxi, that greasy spoon just off the interstate, and your cabin in the woods. You're listening to Coast AM. I'm Richard Serrett, and tonight, this morning, we're coming to you live from Coast's Toronto affiliate, Talk Radio AM 640, and the shiny steel and glass studios perched on the shores of Lake Ontario. Well, the Toronto Film Festival, or TIFF, as it's known affectionately by the locals here, is winding down. So Rob Reiner and Oliver Stone and Ryan Gosling and Justin Timberlake will all be packing their bags and leaving the Tony neighborhood of Yorkville. This week, we put the flannel sheets on the bed. My Blue Jays are locked in a fierce battle with the Bo Sox and Orioles in the American League East. So we are also gathering the last of the tomatoes in the backyard. The boys are back in school. Summer is officially over, and I'm going to miss it. It was a summer filled with baseball, bonfires at Bluffers Beach, ice cream, bike rides, Risk games that lasted days, fishing, and trips to the comic book store. I had a great time on Coast last night, a chilling conversation with AI and robotics expert Eric Schiffer on fully autonomous weapons, followed by 2 hours of open lines, and I thought, with the full moon, we might get some wonderfully weird calls. And we didn't. Nobody claiming that robots were stealing their luggage or that they're the reincarnation of William Howard Taft. Everyone was 100% coherent and cogent and wonderful. I'm not complaining, mind you. You were all fantastic. Someone people thought had gone a little crazy towards the end of his life was the reclusive, eccentric billionaire Howard Hughes. During his life, one of the most financially successful individuals in the world, but in the end, supposedly, he was holed up in a penthouse suite at the Desert Spring Hotel in Las Vegas, where he was described as emaciated, long gray matted hair, long fingernails, a paranoid and a germaphobe, living on the edge of madness. And I still remember seeing him on a gurney being loaded onto a private jet and flown down to Houston, where he died, back in 1976, I remember distinctly watching on my parents' television. Or at least, like most people, I assumed that was Howard Hughes. Turns out, we may have to rethink all of that. In hours 1 and 2, co-authors, researchers Douglas Wellman and Mark Music will reveal an entirely different narrative, one that rewrites the history books. They're about to present some pretty compelling evidence that Hughes didn't die in 1976, and that wasn't him holed up in the Desert Springs Hotel. In fact, they say Howard Hughes married in 1970, moved to Alabama, and lived to the ripe old age of 96. It's all laid out in the second edition of their book, Boxes, The Secret Life of Howard Hughes. That's coming up shortly. In the second half of the program, a truly awe-inspiring story of a young toddler named Josiah, who was diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder. His mom, Tawny Cullen, will be here to describe how Josiah suddenly lost his ability to speak, play, and socialize, and how she and her husband Joe underwent overwhelming physical, emotional, and financial struggles while they fought to help Josiah regain his speech. While other kids around him improved, Josiah only got worse. 5 years later, Josiah, who had not been formally taught to read or write, suddenly began to type on his iPad profound paragraphs about God, science, history, business, music, strangers, and heaven. Come on in, hang your cloak on a peg, grab a stool, and come gather around the fire. I'm feeling a Christmas in the air. There are stories to be told, and you are among friends. And as we say so long to summer one last time, I'll leave you with this quote from Canada's great bard, Bryan Adams. Oh, when I look back now, that summer seemed to last forever. And if I had the choice, yep, I'd always want to be there. Those were the best days of my life. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Richard Serrett. Why don't you stay a while? Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett with you, and we are about to embark on a two-hour journey delving into the secret life of Howard Hughes. Douglas Wellman was born and raised in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and studied television broadcasting at the University of Minnesota. After working at television stations in Minneapolis, St. Paul, he moved to L.A., where he had a 35-year career as an award-winning television producer-director. He worked primarily in comedy on such shows as The Facts of Life, Give Me a Break, Comic Strip Live, An Evening at the Improv, and Comedy on the Road. Concurrent with the last 17 years of his career, he taught sitcom production at the University of Southern California School of Cinematic Arts and also served as assistant dean at that school. A retired Nebraska Air National Guard Major General, Mark Musick, dedicated over a decade to uncover a story which he never expected nor sought to tell. A native of Blair, Nebraska, he attended college in his hometown, Dana College. He rose through the ranks of the U.S. Air Force and the Nebraska Air National Guard as a distinguished navigator during much of his 36-year military career. He served as the commander of the Lincoln-based 155th Air Refueling Wing from 1994 to 1998, the Assistant Adjutant General for Air, and finally, as the mobilization assistant to the deputy commander of U.S. Strategic Command at Offutt Air Force Base, Nebraska, prior to retiring from the military in 2008 as a major general. In his civilian career, Musick was employed with a nonprofit organization in Lincoln, Nebraska. Mark Musick, Douglas Wellman, welcome to Coast AM. How are you?
Very good, Richard. Thank you for having us. This is Doug, by the way.
All right, Doug. Welcome aboard. Mark?
Richard, this is Mark. We appreciate the evening. This should be fun.
Indeed. I'm really looking forward to it. We should point out this book was published several years ago originally, and this is the second edition with new photographs and some testimony from new witnesses that have come forward. And also, as we'll discuss later in the program, you reveal some of a possible identity of who may have been Howard Hughes' body double. But first, I'm guessing that most of what a lot of people know about Howard Hughes, they learn from the movie The Aviator, which is a pretty good film directed by Martin Scorsese, starring Leonardo DiCaprio, came out about 12 years ago. So talk to me a little bit about Howard Hughes. Not the image of the man that's been etched into popular culture, the emaciated, long-haired, paranoid recluse, but the vibrant, innovative businessman, the aviation pioneer.
Doug, do you want to take that? You want me to?
Yeah. Clearly, Hughes was a genius. There was no dispute over that at all. And he did have an amazing career. He inherited a ton of money when both of his parents died young. His father had invented an oil drilling bit, which is still used today. He moved to California, where he became a Hollywood film mogul. His interest in aviation led him to, create airplanes, but he got into the air transportation business, and from there he went into the satellite communication, and he was on the cutting edge of pretty much everything, but he was also not what you would call a team player. He managed to annoy pretty much everyone he worked with. His mother had she had some phobias which were passed on to him, and late in his life he found himself in the position where not only were the phobias kind of taking over his life, but lawyers were taking over his life, and he needed a way out, and he found it by essentially replacing himself with a body double and leaving town.
And when did Hughes supposedly vanish from public life and begin sort of that final stage of his life as a recluse, supposedly? I mean, this is the official version, in the penthouse at the Desert Spring Hotel.
Well, his last photograph was taken in 1954, and it's reported that he started using body double Brooks Randall around 1957. As far as we know, that's about the first time that he actually started using other people to replace him, so he could be somewhere else.
And would Brooks Randall actually show up at meetings in Howard Hughes' stead, and was he able to pull that off?
Well, he wasn't used for meetings. The whole idea, because Hughes didn't see or talk to anyone going back to the early 50s. In fact, Robert Mayhew, who had been a former FBI and CIA operative and who ran his hotel conglomerate in Las Vegas, in the entire time Mayhew worked for him, he never saw him once. His
that is remarkable. Absolutely, yeah, remarkable.
Everything was done with initially with phone calls, and then he got to the point where he wouldn't even talk to people on the phone, which really annoyed Mayhew when that happened. He would only do handwritten memos, and then after that, he wouldn't even do the handwrite them anymore. He had his aides write the memo. His chief aide, Bill Gay, and this was his head man, he didn't see Hughes from 1958 to 1973. So Randall and the other body doubles were used essentially, they were planted in places so people would see, Hughes being in one particular place and think that's where he was, when actually he could be anywhere in the world doing something else.
But obviously the real Howard Hughes was meeting with people, was flying airplanes, was making deals, signing contracts.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, somebody saw him.
Well, absolutely. And I'm glad you brought that up, because there's a really interesting sequence of events which proves the whole thesis here. Howard Hughes, as I say, he was under threat of a lot of litigation. One of the issues was with his ownership of Pan American Airlines, and he was going to have to sell that and actually take his Hughes company public to get out from under of the judgment he had against that Pan Am had against him that he was appealing. But in September 24th, 1972, Howard Hughes, the healthy, compelling businessman, met with two brokers from Merrill Lynch Brokerage House about taking his company public. That was in September of 1972. In December of 1972, Hughes Aircraft arrived in Miami en route to London. He was also into the Internal Revenue Service for a serious amount of money. He didn't want to pay his taxes. So when that plane landed in Miami, IRS agents and customs officials boarded it, and there they found a long-haired, long-fingernailed, long-toenailed man, emaciated and incoherent. He was in such terrible condition that they let him go. This is only 3 months after he met with the Merrill Lynch brokers. So he continued to London. 3 months after that, another healthy, commanding Howard Hughes meets with the governor of Nevada in London, because there was concern that Hughes was crazy. And so who was really holding all these gambling licenses in Nevada? And the Nevada governor demanded a meeting in person. That was in March of 73. And Hughes shows up perfectly healthy, able to talk business. In June and July of 73, this is enough. 3 months later, Hughes decides he wants to buy airplanes, and so he flew two new turboprop aircraft and a new jet aircraft with Tony Blackman, who was the chief test pilot of Hawker Siddeley Aviation. That was in June and July in 1973 in London. 2 weeks later, Hughes breaks his leg in a hotel room, and the doctor who shows up says that Hughes weighs 98 pounds, he's emaciated, physically and mentally incompetent, and he looks like a prisoner of war. So clearly, we have, right there, we have two separate Hughes characters. The one he's got to throw people off his trail, and the one who shows up when he has to in order to keep his businesses running.
Douglas Wellman and Mark Music, co-authors of Boxes, The Secret Life of Howard Hughes. This must have been done with the complicity of the media at the time, I would think, because surely some eager journalist, you know, would have put this together.
You know, that's an interesting question. And one of the things that I think about a lot is that the information on this has been available. Everything in our book is documented where we got the information. And Mark worked on this book for 7 years before I ever met him. He documented all of this. It was information that was there. Nobody else put it together until Mark went looking for him. And I, of course, the reason Mark went looking for it is because Hughes had married a woman in Panama.
And we will get to that, yes. I don't want to get too far ahead here.
Yeah, and he picked up the story, and basically he was the only one who looked at all of this documented material from witnesses and said, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense.
And the bodyguards, and I believe actor Wilfred Brimley, if memory serves, was one of Howard Hughes' bodyguard. I'm not sure which detail he was on. There must have been the bodyguards that were stationed at the Desert Springs Hotel. And then there were the bodyguards that were accompanying the real Howard Hughes as he traveled around the world. Did the bodyguards at the Desert Springs have any idea that they were guarding an imposter?
Well, that's the people who worked for Hughes. That's a really good question. Some of them did, I think, and some of them didn't, because... well, Mark, on for example, Bill Gay had to know, right?
Yeah, what we think in putting this all together, there's about five aides that knew exactly what was going on, and Bill Gay was their supervisor, so Bill knew what was going on. So there's a limited number of people who actually knew the real story. Some of them were with Nick, who's this other identity that he took, and some of them were worth the stand-in, so they could communicate back and forth between those two, no matter where they were located, you know, all over the world.
Now, Doug.
I was going to say, on your website, you have a picture of one of them, Brooks Randall. It's a side-by-side picture in a newspaper clipping. The stand-ins, and we know of at least two, but the stand-ins were picked not so much because they looked like Hughes the way he was then, but because he looked like the way people remembered him. So, in fact, Brooks Randall was quite a bit younger than Hughes, but he looked like a younger Hughes, and people accepted that that must be him.
Right, right, and we'll get into who Brooks Randall was a little bit later. And thank you for pointing that out. I wanted to mention that our webmaster tonight, Sean Latasor, has posted a little video. It's about 2.5 minutes of some great Howard Hughes material in the carousel section on the website, coasttocoastam.com. And that's kind of a nice primer for tonight's discussion.
He did an excellent job, by the way. I looked at that. I sent it to some friends. He did a very nice job of presenting that.
It is. It's terrific. It's a nice, concise little piece. And... as I mentioned, I remember watching on TV in 1976, it was April, Howard Hughes, what we thought was Howard Hughes being, you know, on a gurney, being loaded onto a private jet, I guess, at the airport in Las Vegas, and he died en route to a hospital in Houston. I mean, how could that one get by a medical examiner? Would there not be, well, they didn't have DNA testing back then, but surely.
Well, it almost didn't get by him because he didn't want it to get by him. And Mark has done quite a bit of research on that.
Yeah, he really, when they brought that body in, from Acapulco, actually. His last stop was in Mexico. And they brought that in over the border there into Houston. There's a lot of confusion about, you know, is this Howard Hughes or who is this? And they went through and really didn't do a full examination because they didn't want to do a full examination. The CIA was in the middle of it at that point in time. and they wanted to make sure that this body just got in the ground very, very quickly. And they did that. That's exactly what they did. The body got in the ground less than 48 hours of his death.
All right, listen, we're going to take a time out. And when we come back, we'll talk about, well, the story of boxes is really the story of Eva McClelland, who met this mysterious man named Nick down in Panama in the late 60s. And we'll find out who that Nick turned out to be. Back with more of my discussion with Mark Music and Douglas Wellman. Here's Dinah Washington, Brooks Benton, taking us into the break on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Brian Wilson, Mike Love, Al Jardine, Brian Johnson, and original Beach Boy David Marks are reunited back in 2012 for their 50th anniversary, and the reunion didn't last too long. Some acrimony between Mike Love and Brian Wilson, but in that 1 year they got back together, they put out a truly remarkable album, and this is the title track called That's Why God Made the Radio. Interesting book out came out a few years ago, and it's by Peter Harry Brown. It's called Howard Hughes, the Untold Story, and I thought I'd share a couple of fascinating facts with you about the wacky recluse. Was Howard Hughes in preparation for a 1938 flight? Hughes had thousands of ping pong balls stuffed in a compartment of his plane because he believed it would keep it afloat in water. And then during a stop, someone opened the hatch and an avalanche of balls, ping pong balls, poured out. Betty Davis's husband reportedly found out Howard Hughes was having an affair with her and had a private eye make a tape recording of their tryst. Hughes reportedly paid $75,000 in hush money. Finally, a dating and friendship site to meet others with similar interests, ParanormalDate.com. Find your match that shares an interest in the paranormal, science, life after death, ghost stories, Bigfoot, UFOs, alternative medicine, and conspiracy theories. ParanormalDate.com. It's free to join, and then you can use the promotional code George if you want to explore further. ParanormalDate.com. You are not alone. Back to my conversation with Douglas Wellman, Mark Music, co-authors of Boxes, The Secret Life of Howard Hughes, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm Richard Serrett. Just a reminder, coming up in hour three of the program, Tawny Cullen, the author of Josiah's Fire. This is a remarkable true story about her autistic child, Josiah. Right now, we continue to speak with Douglas Wellman and Mark Music, the co-authors of Boxes, The Secret Life of Howard Hughes. Douglas, Mark, the story of Boxes is really the story of Eva McClelland, who meets this mysterious man named Nick down in Panama, I believe, in 1969. They marry, and eventually it was confirmed to her that Nick was, in fact, the Howard Hughes. But let's back up. How did you first hear about this story, and how did you meet Eva McClelland?
Let me take this one, Doug. Okay, I work for a nonprofit organization, and a national one, and Eva had made contact with that organization wanting to talk about leaving some property to it. And I talked to her over the phone several times. This was in 1999, 2000, and I knew that she was married. I knew her husband was up in years and was in poor health as he aged. And he passed away in 2001. I was actually in Georgia in January 2002, so I thought I'd go over and meet her. And so I went to Dothan, Alabama, it was January 2001, and met her, found her to be a very intelligent lady, very personable lady, very friendly lady. And she said, Mark, there's something I want to tell you. And she knew I had a military background. And I said, okay, Eva, what is that? And she said, I was married to Howard Hughes. And I thought, oh, this is just absolute lunacy. You know, this is craziness. This lady is just loony. I said, Eva, Howard Hughes died 25 years ago. She said, that's what they want you to think. And she went through this story then. And I listened to it, and really didn't believe it until as I went back and talked to her. I noticed nothing ever changed in her story. No dates, no episodes, no even words between her and her husband. Nothing ever modified. So I started to go out and investigate this because I thought this can't possibly be true, but I'll go check it out because it became very, very curious of it. And then as I started learning about Howard Hughes, I found out what a mysterious man he was also. And so I went to different locations. I went and looked up birth certificates. I went and visited with people. I went back to where they lived and concluded after 4 years of really not believing her and going back and forth of this can't possibly be true to the point of this is true. What she's telling me is absolutely the truth. And as I put these pieces together, I found that there's things that she was uncertain of too about him. And so we then started talking about things that were happening at different times. And I said, you know, this certain element happened at this time. And she said, no, I wasn't. But it began to all come together. And then you get the books, read the books of Howard Hughes, which I've read virtually every one of them. And it describes him of this later years as this mystery man, this that goes in between a charming, healthy, you know, in command man, and this drug addicted, mentally incompetent 90-pound man. And then it all became true. And I said it took me 4 years to believe Eva. After I came to believe her, what we found out was that everything she said was true. There's nothing she said was ever not true.
At what point did Nick, and we should talk a little bit about the identity of Nick, but at what point did Howard Hughes reveal to Eva that he was Howard Hughes, and did she believe him right away?
When they met, it was November of 69 when they met. It was in Panama, and he was a tall, tall, handsome man, always doing business. She knew there was mystery with him. She didn't know what it was. She knew there was mystery. They were engaged then in March of 70. They were married in May of 70. And she was beginning to put the pieces together. Also, she did not know who he was. It took her about 3 years to figure out this man I'm married to, Nick Nicolay, who has the idea of a man named Werner Nicely, is really Howard Hughes. And then in 1974, 1975 is when he revealed it to her. He said, I'm Howard Hughes. And she said, by then I knew it. I knew that it was Howard Hughes at that point in time. But that was really a turning point between Howard and Eva, because at that point, after he revealed it, she could ask him anything. She asked him about flying the Hercules, the Spruce Goose. She asked him about flying the world in 1930, 38, and so forth. And he would talk about his childhood also. His childhood was, you know, growing up in Texas. His dad was in the oil business. His dad and mom fought like cats and dogs. He was an only child, sent to schools, boarding schools, and things like that. So at that point, he basically started talking about his, you know, growing up life and reminiscing about his life.
And now, arguably, Howard Hughes was one of the most famous people in the world. I mean, at one time, he was the richest man in the world, or one of them. And granted, no official photograph had been taken of him since 1954, but surely he must have still resembled that Howard Hughes. I mean, how could she not see that right away?
He changed his looks. He changed his hair color. His hair was normally, you know, black, and he changed his hair color and lightened it. And through this time period, Eva noticed that he was doing something to his hair, lightening his hair. And one time she said, Nick, what was your hair color when you were younger? And he said, well, it was black. And she said, well, it's coming in black now also. And then he would go, she said he used something that smelled like potash to lighten his hair color up. And then the other thing that he did that we found out, when we first put the first book out, we speculated this, but his eyes were blue, and they were a brilliant blue. They didn't look natural. They didn't look normal. Eva said when you looked into them, they reflected back. It was almost like he had lenses on, you know.
Contact lenses.
But
yes.
He didn't. And as I talked to other people, I said, what color were his eyes? And they said his eyes were blue. They were brilliant blue.
And Howard Hughes' eyes originally were what color?
Just dark color. They're just a dark color. That's the only thing I've seen in a book. It's probably dark brown, I
right.
think.
You know, one of the things about the eyes, because I've had people ask me that, how can someone change their eye color? And this surgery was done in Boston, and it was experimental. And there are several ways to change eye colors. Most people, if they want to change their eye color, they use a contact lens. That's very common today. There's also a surgical method. You know, when you look at your eyes, they've got different shades and colors, and as you stand back from a distance, they give the impression of being one color. That's what they do today. That's not what Nick had done. His eyes were a solid disc of color. There was no shading in them, and the blue was a little bit darker blue than normal. And that gave them, everyone that we talked to said his eyes were just weird. That gave them a deeper color, but also it made them reflective. People looked like they were, you know, like they were mirrors. And subsequently, I've discovered that that eye treatment where you color the entire, I don't know what it's called, the cornea, or the part around the pupil.
Right, right.
That's become popular with body modification people, the people who do tattoos and piercings and implants and all of that stuff. They're doing that now. It's the exact same look that Nick had, but now the body modification people are doing it.
Obviously, the surgery is more sophisticated, so it's not as clearly apparent.
They do the old style on purpose for shock effect. I saw a man who had his eyes done in red. And it was pretty unnerving.
And have you verified that surgery, that procedure was available in when? When was this done? The late 1960s?
Yes. And it was experimental. And it was done in Boston. He went there for what was spoken of as an eye problem. But when he came back, he had blue eyes instead of, I think they were brown originally.
Any other distinguishing marks that would have identified Nick as Howard Hughes?
He had burn scars from his plane crash in Beverly Hills. I think it was 1947, wasn't it, Mark?
1946.
He had burn scars. He was pulled out of his plane crashed in Beverly Hills. He was pulled out of the wreckage by a passing serviceman, but he had burns on his head and his hands. And later on in the story, we may get to talking about Dee Dee, but she verified, she was someone that became friends of theirs, a young woman who worked at a pharmacy, and she verified that the burns on Nick's hands and had matched what she'd been told, or what was recorded, that Hughes had the burns in the same place.
And did Eva have photographs of them when they were married? Were there photographs of a... Obviously, you know, on the cover of the book, Boxes of the Secret Life of Howard Hughes, we see a picture of a much older Howard Hughes looking a little bit like Edmund Gwynn from Miracle on 34th Street with the big white beard. But were there younger photos of Eva with Nick Howard Hughes, let's say wedding photographs?
He never wanted his photograph taken. And she said this many times to me. And they had no photographs of the wedding, which I thought was rather strange. To remember it by, but there was no photographs of the wedding. She said he never wanted his photographs taken. And the photographs was actually the turning point for me. When I asked her, this was in 2006, she was living in Jacksonville, and I asked her, Eva, do you have any pictures of Nick? And she said, well, he never wanted his photograph, but I do think I have a couple. And so she looked through the boxes that she had in her apartment there, and that's why the book is named Boxes, is because she basically lived from boxes. She looked through her stuff there and found two pictures. And to me, it was a man, a tall man. You could tell he was tall, but he was a long ways away. And you really couldn't see any facial characteristics or anything of it. And I said, Eva, can I have these? And she said, yes. In fact, you can have everything. You can have everything I've got, all records, all medical records, military records, everything. And so she gave me everything, and it was right there that I said, this story's real. I was actually talking to someone in the Houston Police Department about photographic analysis, And she told me, she said, if this lady, Eva McClellan, was lying, making this story up, she'd never give you anything. But she gave me everything. And so I have everything. And it wasn't until later that we looked at those pictures, blew them up, and you begin to pick out facial characteristics. You begin to pick out lines on the cheek and lines on the, around the mouth. The other thing that matches is the shape of the head. Now, Howard Hughes had a very rounded head, as in pictures in the 30s and 40s. He had a very rounded head profile. And we have one picture of Nick also. We had to blow it up. But he also has a very, very rounded head. And we blew those up to the same size, overlaid them, and you have a very nice match on that. The other interesting thing about Howard was his eyelids were different. His left eyelid looked different than his right eyelid. And there was a definite folding of the eyelid that was different between the two, which is not common in a lot of people. Now, we could not ever pick that out on any of the pictures of Nick, but that's one of the very unusual characteristics of Howard was those eyelids.
But you couldn't find that same eyelid on any of the pictures of Nick.
No, the pictures of Nick were so far away or so blurry that
right.
you couldn't do it. However, we could pick out the lines of the face, the lines on the cheek, the shape of the head, the shape of the chin, and things like that.
Douglas Wellman and Mark Music are the co-authors of Boxes, The Secret Life of Howard Hughes, now in the second edition with new photographs, new interviews, new evidence. Let's spend a few moments. We're heading into a break, and then we will open up the phone lines at the top of the hour and take questions and comments. But let's just spend a few moments and discuss Howard Hughes' alter ego, this Nick, this pseudonym that he went by. Who was this Nick character, really?
Okay, let me take this one. As we researched Nick, there was a man named Werner Nicely, a real man. He was born in 1921, born in Ohio. I've gone back and found his birth certificate. Smart guy, went into World War II in 1942, 5'11" tall, as on the records of entering the military. Was in aviation aircraft mechanic. Married in 1949, had a couple boys, and left the Air Force in 1955, moved to, of all places, Panama in 1957. And at that point, he was working for the CIA. His son confirmed that for us, and so we now have a CIA connection to him. And he basically just disappeared about 1967 or so after that. His wife left him in 1965. His son left in 1967. And so he was left in Panama working for the CIA, counter drugs, and associated with Colombia, the country of Colombia. And basically must have just disappeared. We really don't know what happened to him. I talked to his brother, and I talked to his son to get information on him. And then we've got all of his medical records, military records, and things like that.
And so Howard Hughes assumed the identity, this is the idea, of this Vernon Nicely.
Correct. What we think happened was this all happened about 1969, and what we believe, this is speculation on our part, but what we believe is that the CIA came to Howard. There was a Soviet submarine that had sank in northwest of Hawaii in 1968, and it was in 1968, 1969 that they went to Howard and said, We need that raised to see what the encryption devices is on it and the equipment, things like that. And so Howard went and did it. He raised it in 1974 and went and did it, built a ship called the Glomar Explorer. And what we think he said was at that point, I'll go do that. You get me another identity. He was not a stranger to other identities, as we found out. And so you get me another identity, CIA. And the identity that he gave him was another CIA individual associated with the CIA who had disappeared in some way.
And how do we go from Vernon Nicely to Nick?
He loved confusion. Eva would just laugh and laugh. He just loved confusion. And so he just made it up. He just created something that he'd probably like. And it would add more confusion into the matter that he was already creating for himself. And so he just made that Nick Nickley versus Werner Nicely. Later on, he had Eva sign everything for him. And what she signed was Werner Nicely. She had to practice it.
All right, Douglas, Mark, stay put. We'll take a timeout, come back, open up the phone lines, questions and comments. As we discuss the secret life of Howard Hughes, here's ELO and Evil Woman taking us into the break on Coast to Coast AM.